Well, I'm going to start at the beginning of my coming to the path. When I was 6 years old, I was very sick. I had a very high fever. They had to throw me in a bath of ice water to bring my fever down. And during that illness, I left the body. And I went in the inner, and there was Baba Sawan. And I knew that they were going to send me back. And I said, no, don't send me back. You have no idea how bad it is down there. You know, I'm telling them, you know, about down here. And he said, no, you have to go back. Well, I grabbed him. I put my arms around him and grabbed him. And I said, no, I'm not going back. And he patted me on the back and he said, that's okay. You have to go back. There is something for you later in your life. So, fast forward, I went to art school at Ringling School of Art in Sarasota. And there was another student that was there who came from Franklin, New Hampshire. Well, she knew Judith Perkins, and she knew about the path through that. And one day I was in her room, and I looked down and I saw Master's picture, and I said, "Who is that?" And she said, "That's, you know, Kirpal Singh, Master Kirpal Singh. May I read that?" And she let me read it, and I went to my room, and I read it, and I looked at him, and I said, "I belong to him. I belong to him." And I felt like I was levitating, you know, the whole time that happened. It was like, you know, I was seeing people's auras, and I was intoxicated. And the other student and I, well, let me back up. I wrote to Judith Perkins in Franklin, New Hampshire, and she gave me the name of Sonny Cowan, who had satsang at St. Petersburg, Florida. So my friend Sue and I went to, you know, we must have taken a bus and got a cab. And we were, there was a circle. The road was circular. And he kept going around and around. He says, "I can't find the address." And I said, I looked over and I said, "It's there. That's it. That's the church." And he said, "No, that's not it. Let us out." We went in, and George Arnsby Jones happened to be there giving a visit. And he was giving a guest talk. And he lived in Pensacola, I believe, at that time. And he came down to give a talk. Well, he was there giving a lecture of Master Kirpal Singh. And the thing that really hit home and what he said, he looked at me and he said, "Whatever has happened before and whatever has happened to come later, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have come to the feet of the Master." And I said, "Yes, that is." Well, I walked up to him and I said, "I want to be initiated now." And I wrote Judith Perkins and I said, "I want to be initiated now." Because, you know, the Master says, you know, you're protected under, as an initiate, so you're protected under the Master power. And I wanted it now. So he gave me the address of Etta Perrin in Florida. And I called her. And I got her address, and I made arrangements to go down there for satsang. And I took the Greyhound bus from Jacksonville, Florida, to Miami, Florida. And Phil Perrin picked me up at the train station or bus station, and I walked in the house, and it was like, oh, wow. It just hit me. The feeling that we get here of the master power, that was it. That it was there. And it's like, oh. And I told her I wanted to be initiated. And she said, you have to be on the vegetarian diet. And I got told that, no problem. Done. It's a done deal. So that's how I came to the master.
This is the short version of this. I was a seeker for a number of years, and I was living on Nantucket Island, and I had seen a book from this guy called Ram Dass that I read that piqued my interest, you might say. And so from there, when I went to New York City and left to go back to South Carolina where I was living, Be Here Now had just come out, so I got one of the first copies of that. But what had happened before that was I read what the pamphlet was about, and he was talking about being in India, and he was talking about meeting this, I think it was a guru, he said, not a sadhu, but a guru with a long white beard, and he explained who it was. I don't remember if he said his name or anything. But that just struck me so greatly that I said, well, that's what I'm going to start looking for. So because I'd already been on a long search, going to all kind of religious places, Hare Krishnas, you name it. So I was walking along the cobblestone street one day, and they had an information board, and I saw this picture of this guru with a white beard. So I said, well, and he was going to have a meeting with one of his representatives in a week. So I went to that, and I was very interested in it. So I got initiated by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. So I started doing that for a while, and eventually I started getting some strange things inside. So I got in touch with a couple of his representatives and asked them about it, and they had no clue what I was talking about. So I said, well, I thought, okay, this is a stepping stone, basically. So I'm going to continue looking, but I'll continue doing this meditation. After that, me and a friend had gone out to a beach, and I was body surfing and broke my neck and was put in the hospital there on Nantucket. This is the second time I'd broken my neck. This was in 1972. First one was 1966. So anyway, I was there, and then they had to move me back to Greensboro, North Carolina, where I was from, and live in my parents' house and be around orthopedic surgeons and that type of thing. So I was in traction in my old bedroom, and I was just praying and pleading with God that I really want to find, please bring me to a real guru. And I was pretty naive, to be honest with you. So I was just, that's all I knew I could do. I couldn't do anything but lay there. So that's what I was doing. So anyway, a good friend of mine came, he used to come and talk to me, and then one day he brought up a book. He was the head of a crisis control center in Greensboro for overdoses for hippies and stuff like that. So he came, he said, and we had talked a lot about spiritual things, and some he knew about, some he didn't, but he gave me this book. He said, a lady has volunteered, and her sister is an initiate of this man, and he handed me the Crown of Life. So I started looking through it, and I was stunned by that book. Because I thought I knew a lot about yoga. That's how naive I was, anyway. So I looked through that book, and I saw pictures of Master, and I said, this must be God giving me a clue that this may be my guru. Well, I kept looking at it and reading about it, and then I thought to myself, pretty let down, actually. I said, well, I'm here in Greensboro, North Carolina, with a broken neck. This man lives in Delhi, India. So I said, I'll keep looking, I'll, you know, see what happens. So doing the Maharishi's meditation. So about 5 days later, Steve comes running back. I'd given him the book back to give the lady. Steve comes back and he said, "You know the book you read?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That guru is going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2 weeks." That was 100 miles away from our house. And I have to say, I was stunned. It's a joke. And my brother, Jim, me, and the guy that gave me the book, we went and saw Master Kripal first time at... Somebody can help me with this. Was it the Unitarian Church that allowed him to give a talk? Does anybody know? Or Presbyterian? Anybody know? Well, anyway, so we went there, and I remember seeing him for the first time with Mr. Khanna and Ganaji behind him. So I went in there, and there weren't that many people, but I said to myself, this man is going to know that I'm really a high person because I've been meditating. Of course, so anyway, he gave a beautiful talk, and there weren't that many people there. So we stayed for 4 days in Charlotte and went every day to Charlie's house, where his mother was living there, and Charlie was living with her. And that's where everybody came to listen to Master Kripal. And I was not a full vegetarian, but I was close enough. And in those days, there was a little bit of a leeway because it was, you know, a lot of people know what that meant. So I think I talked to Mr. Connor about it. He was the one that you had to go through, kind of. So he said, and I wrote a whole story of my life and what I had been through and everything. And Mr. Connor said, the master says that you can be initiated. So on October 5th, 1972, I sat with 25 people in Charlie Fulcher's living room and got initiated by Master Kripal. And that lady right there is one of the most, Sally, is one of my favorite people, because when they did the sound, what were you, 10? 10, and your brother was, and I was stunned. Like, that's a lot to go through if you're an adult, to go through what they explained about the everything and what you're doing. But, of course, the children get the sound and have to wait later on to get instructions for the light stuff. And I looked over at them, and I was just amazed by it, and I heard this loud voice say, "Look at me!" And I looked, and the master was looking right at me. I was only from here 6 feet away. And the point is that I had seen him many other times and talked to him in person. But that day, I know, and to this day, because he was there as a small child, and I looked away, that I had his full attention without me asking to have the attention. So that was one of my greatest days of all. So that's how I got initiated. It's quite miraculous, really. So that, I have many stories, but that's the one I wanted to tell you, my initiation story. Who's next?
I was there on October the 5th. No, I got it. And one of my best experiences was when I was getting the sound initiation. I ended up, there wasn't any place for me to sit, so I ended up on the floor, and I don't know if this was Master. I was right there, you know, and I was, you know, I couldn't really sit down because I hadn't really sat on the floor, you know, my whole life. And I was 21 years old then. And so I was trying to do the position. And, you know, I was up on the balls of my feet, and I was just all, you know, I couldn't really do it. And he put his hand on my shoulder and pushed me down like that. So that's my best experience, that Master Kripal Singh had his hand on my shoulder.
Well, some of you remember perhaps 1972, the tour began in Washington, D.C., and there were about 800 of us crammed into the Veterans Memorial Building. And it was very hot, actually, very muggy, even in October. And so they had these big windows pulled down, open to the top. And we're sitting there listening to Master's talk. And all of a sudden, this enormous moth flew in the window. I mean, I'd never seen anything so big. It was like a bird, at least 6 or 7 inches across. And it flew back and forth over the crowd and circled around and then landed on Master's shoulder. And, of course, everyone gasped, you know. It was just like, it was, someone must remember that if you were there. Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was newly initiated just a few months. And another experience that happened there, I was living in the backwoods in Vermont at the time, and we thought the proper attire was clean but old and baggy clothes and, you know, the easy lifestyle of the backwoods people. And after meditation, Master would ask how many have seen the star and the moon and so forth. And I remember seeing this woman sitting right up front, and she was the epitome of everything that I didn't think was right for people to be, you know, nylon stockings, dressed to the nines. Anyway, when he was asking the questions, and then he said, and how many have seen the Master's form, and her arm went up, and I was like, what? How can that possibly be? You know, she doesn't look the part. Anyway, I had a lot to learn. I was very young and very, you know. And there was another day, because this was a long program, I think 8 days or so. And so this one particular day, I had an infant to care for, so I didn't make all of the program. But I had just put her in the daycare or the center. And so I came in late to a talk. Or a meditation. I think he had already put us in meditation. So I was in the back and on an aisle. And sitting there, we were all on the floor. And suddenly, I became aware of, apparently Master had left the dais and had walked down the aisle that I was on. And suddenly was engaged in some kind of whispered conversation with somebody. And lo and behold, he was right here. And what was happening was that the bottom of his wool coat matched perfectly with my nose. And he kept turning, you know, and whispered conversation. I just became intoxicated. I didn't even realize it was him. And then, you know, there was this wonderful feeling of going back and forth. And then when I opened my eyes and realized here he is, I just, you know, I just lost it there. And I have one other story to relay. The tour went on, and my infant kept getting sick, and so I realized I couldn't go too much further, but we made it to Chicago. And my parents, who live 200 miles north of Chicago, came down, and they were very curious about the path, but didn't know what to think. Anyway, they came to a talk of Master Kripal, and I was wherever I was staying with my child. But I had told my dad, I said, you know, it's very important to get darshan. To get darshan. That's important. So they went to the talk, and after the talk, they were lined up along with everybody else on either side of where Master was leaving. And Kripal was just walking straight ahead. He wasn't really, for whatever reason, not looking to the right or the left. He just was making some kind of beeline. And my dad remembered what I had said, and he thought, if I don't do something, I'm not going to get darshan. So Master just got a big smile on his face, and he turned to him and just blessed him. So he was right. He got his darshan. And after that, he was able to see the Masters several times, so it was a great introduction for him.
I'm talking about 1972. I was finishing my high school, and just after finishing my high school, I was 16, and my younger brother was 10, and the two of us, we lived in a place called Calcutta, and we came up to Delhi, and we stayed with our aunt. And our aunt said, hey, you have to go and see Maharaji. And I didn't know who's Maharaji and things like that, and we were small. So we go to Savan Ashram, and we're sitting there, and it's our turn, and Maharaji calls us, and Maharaji looks straight into my eyes, and he says, so you're working, in Hindi, of course. I said, no, Maharaji, I just gave my exams. I'm waiting for my results. And he smiled. And that was it. And I came back to Calcutta, and the family situation and things like that changed so quickly that I had to start working. And from then till now, I am working. And although technically I'm retired, but I'm working. I'll cut it short. And then in 1973, right? Immediately, what happened during the interim period between 1972 and 1973, we didn't have any satsang in Calcutta, but somehow my parents were initiated. And at our house, in those days, we didn't have tape recorders and stuff like that in Calcutta, so we used to get satsandesh. And I was given the responsibility of reading from the Hindi satsandesh. I used to read there. And then in 1973, 27 July is what I understand, I went to Delhi and I got initiated from Master. And, you know, Master left the body in 1974, and right after that, around 1976 or something, something snapped and I was out of the path. I was out of the path. And to cut the long story short, many things happened. And say, 30 years later, I find myself in Toronto, in Canada. In between, I was very successful working for multinationals. There's that good education and all that. Struggled in the beginning, but made it. And then in Toronto now, I am desperately hungry, looking for a spiritual somebody to help me out, and I couldn't find anything. And then I find on a kind of a poster somewhere written that about a lady. She's called a Vietnamese lady, I think. She's called the Supreme Leader, and she was there and all that. I said, well, let me go there. So her things, which was I read, and that was same like our paths, vegetarian, chastity, and things like that, meditation and all that. So I go there, and they, as I go there, their representative, she's asking me, whom were you initiated with? And I told her I was initiated in the past. And she's, whom? I said, Master Kripal Singh. I said, go back. Don't lose your faith. Go back. And but have the food, you know, it was good food there. I had the good food, and I went back from there. And is that me?
Someone banged on it, and I don't know who that was. That's working now. Okay, magic touch.
Okay, so was searching for Master Kripal, and I did a search on internet, and I got the email address, and I think in all probability it was the email address of John Mack, and I wrote to him, and he put me in touch with the person in Toronto, John, used to be is in Vancouver even now. He's in West Coast and this is in East Coast. And that gentleman, he told me that, you know, the right thing for you to do would be that there is a retreat taking place in Austria. And you should go for that retreat. And that retreat is normally organized. It's called the International Retreat, and it's organized by the Europeans, mainly person who's the group leader in UK. So he says that but if you want to go there, get in touch with this guy, Dr. Ujjagar Singh, because he's going there, and you will have company, and he knows all about it. And I said, okay. So I call him up, Dr. Ujjagar Singh. He heard everything, no response. I said, okay. Then again, just before the retreat, I call him. I said, look, we're going together. Wouldn't it be good to meet and all that? He said, okay, fine. We go to a vegetarian restaurant, him and his wife. And we're sitting there and eating, and I told him that looked like this. We used to have satsang in our house in Calcutta and all that. But two Sadajis used to come, you know, two families, Sadar families used to come there with their whole family. And they always said that, you know, we also have another brother who's in UK, another brother who's in UK. And I heard it. It's okay. So I told him like this. They asked me, you're from Calcutta? I said, yes. Who used to come? I said, these people. So the wife got very curious, and she asked me, like, you're telling me the name of the person. Tell me the name of his wife. I told him the name of his wife. No, are you telling me the name of the younger brother's wife? I said that. And then this Dr. Ujjagar Singh said, I am the middle brother. See the divine plan. I mean, he used to be in UK in those days, but now he's in Canada, and we meet like this, and we're coming here. And we have the retreat. And after the retreat, there is the group leader of Germany, Mr. Leto. He comes to drop us to the Munich airport, and we're standing there, and he suddenly vanishes. And he comes running back with a packet of savories, you know, nuts and stuff like that. I said, what's this for? He said, no, keep it. I said, okay. So we kept it with us, and we are flying back to Toronto. All smooth. Just before landing at Toronto, we find that it's it's rainy and stormy. And then our plane was going to land, but it was wavering and it didn't land. And suddenly we found the plane taking off again. And the plane took off and ultimately landed in, Syracuse. Okay, it landed in Syracuse. Because that was a jumbo jet, and that plane was so large that it couldn't land anywhere nearby Toronto, like in Ottawa, Montreal, and all that. And we were waiting in Syracuse, and they did not allow anybody to deplane because the plane was going to be in Canada, and people had Canadian visas, and they didn't have the U.S. visas, many of them. So, this is a jumbo jet where Syracuse has the facility for it to land, but didn't have the facility for it to deplane people and things like that. And so, no food, bathroom stinking, standing there. And that's when, after all food ran out, those savories came in. And a lot of more stories like that, but I'll let others.
Hello, I'm Rick Casey, and I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. The only time I ever met Kripal Singh was in 1972 at Charlie's house, and I didn't know these two brothers were there. It was nice to meet my spiritual brothers here. And how I came to be there was that I had found out about the path maybe 9 months or so before through readings that Charlie had given me. And, I mean, I had been going to this reading club with Charlie that Charlie held at the high school for like 3 years. But gradually it led to this realization of the path. And we would drive up to Mr. Khanna's house in Washington. So I'd been to Mr. Khanna's house several times with Charlie and other people from Charlotte, Chapel Hill area. And we learned that Kripal Singh was coming on a tour in 1972. And I was seeking initiation, and Charlie said, well, you should wait. You should wait until you see the master in person. So I did. I'd started college at Chapel Hill, but came home that weekend to make sure I was in Charlotte on October 4th and 5th. I think the evening of October 4th, Kirpal Singh gave a talk at my high school, the high school where Charlie taught at Myers Park. But the following morning at Charlie's house, initiation was held in Charlie's living room. And like he said, there were a couple dozen people there. But as often happens, after initiation, Master would ask who didn't think they saw enough. And I thought, hoped I wasn't being impertinent by raising my hand. And I think Eugene Odom, or Jeff Odom, I forget, he also raised his hand. And so Master was sitting across the room in a chair, and he stood up and shuffled across the room to Eugene, who was sitting on the floor, and he motioned him to look up. And so Master looked down at him, and he looked up. And he comes shuffling across the room towards me, and I'm petrified. You know, I'm about to meet God, you know. And so I was just staring at his feet, and he motioned, like, look up, look up. And so I looked into his eyes, and his eyes, it was like looking into the clear blue sky. There was nobody looking back. It was just infinite. And you kind of lose yourself in the moment. And that was my only contact with Master, but it was one I'll never forget.
This is a little bit of a backstory about my father's experiences. I hope this is okay. It was about 1958 or 59 in a revival. We were raised Southern Baptist. And I think it was the night I gave myself to the Lord, seems like, if I remember correctly. Because my dad, I went forward. My dad didn't come. Somebody had to nudge him and say, you know, your kid's down front, move it, I guess. And I didn't find this out for 20, 25 years. But my father went home from that revival and told my mother, I saw God in prayer tonight. And now my mother was a seeker. She'd hide astrology books under the bed. She, very seriously, at one point, she had stigmata. She came in with all kinds of knowledge and beautiful, wonderful woman. Hard beginning of life, hard end of life, but wonderful, positive woman. And so, Mom, they don't know what to make of this. We're talking about 1958, 59. We're still in Missouri. Mother said, you saw God. And he said, yeah, in prayer. He said, it was all white. And he had on this thing. And she said, what do you mean? And he said, well, like when you get out of the shower. And she said, a turban? And he said, yeah, a turban. And a long white beard. And they don't know what to make of this. And this is years before we go to Florida and meet George Jones, you know, everything. And you have to understand that my dad was a good kind of son of Northern European. I'm going to be sexist here. I'm really sorry. But, you know, just that stereotype of the male, you keep your emotions to yourself. Your love is you work pretty hard for your family, but you don't show a lot of emotion or anything. His yes was yes. His no was no. He was so grounded in his faith in Christianity. He wasn't a Bible banger, and he, you know, each man to his own. He was just really, but dull, you know, but strong, handsome, and he wouldn't even quote the verse. He would just say, if you ask him anything about his religion or beliefs or anything, he'd say John 3:16. He wouldn't say, for God so loved the world that he gave his own. He'd just look at you. John 3:16. It was a simplicity that was beautiful in my father, and it took me decades to appreciate. But anyway, so fast forward, as you say, over 10 years. We've moved to Pensacola, Florida. We moved a whole lot until a house that was sold out from under them that my mother and dad wanted. My mother would not. She was always still looking and looking. It came back for sale. We buy that house. And my mother's English, and across the street are George and Margaret Jones, who are also English. So that was the connection. So Meg asks Mother over for tea. Mother walks in, and George and Margaret have behind their sofa, for those of you who were ever at their house, there's a long picture, a painting of Master, and the three mountains of Tretuti are also in that painting with this beautiful, it was one of George's students who was an artist, but not from Pensacola, from Chicago. It's Madeline. That's all I remember about the name. So Mom walks in the house, and as I said, my mom's a seeker now. A little aside, she was in World War II in Coventry that got blitzed, carpet-bagged, and lived through all that, came to the United States in 47 to marry my dad, who'd been stationed nearby, and had what we would now call PTSD. And as she said, in your father's family, if you break an arm or a leg, you go to the doctor and get it set. But in your father's family, if you've got mental or emotional problems, you prayed. And that's all they knew, and that's what they did. And so she and the Christ Power and St. Paul got together early on, and I have a copy of her Bible where she's written stuff and underlined, and, you know, because she was raised without any religion background. So anyway, so Mom had already been through the grinder a bit, and she's still seeking. Oh, she's always seeking. She's always seeking. And the stigmata thing scared her to death. And she prayed that away. And the Master took that early on. But anyway, so she sees this picture of this guru. And, of course, naturally, she's led, and George initiates her. In the meantime, I'm at Pensacola Junior College, and I'm studying with a fellow called Ralph Hunt, and I'm in a World Lit 101 class, and we never got past the Vedas and Buddhism. This guy was, he'd be in the middle of a sentence, and then he'd be gone, and we'd all just sit patiently till he'd come back. So I'm reading this stuff, and I'm going, man, there's a whole world out there that knows stuff that I don't know about this. I remember walking from the kitchen table to my bedroom, sitting with my back against the wall, and sitting down and going, okay, you know, I got to see something. What is this about? So, life goes on. I'm initiated. My mother's initiated. We see Master. Well, I won't go into that, but we saw Master in 72. But my mother is reticent to tell my father all about this. We're a vegetarian, she first, and then me. And she's slowly letting Dad know about these things. And Master had written her and said, your dear husband will come along. Be patient. He will come along. Okay? So at some point, and again, she's telling me this later, at some point, he's familiar with what we're doing. We've got pictures of Master. Not now, we have him everywhere now, or she had him. But she's reading a Sat Sandesh or something, and there's a picture on the back of it. And this is over 10 years later. And my dad says, that's who I saw. And Mother says, what? She said, he said, that's who I saw. And it was Baba Thawang Singh. It was not a picture of Master on the back of this. It was, you know how Master puts Baba Thawang's pictures everywhere? And it was Baba Thawang Singh picture. And it was just such a wonderful affirmation after all that time, of course. And things went on. I just tell you quickly, in 72, told this story. They after meditation and everything, we're in the lobby of this hotel. It's very comfortable. And Master's upstairs. And, you know, some of the gatekeepers come and say, go, go. He's not, he go, leave. Master's not coming down. He's had a full day. Go, go. We stay and we stay. There's about six of us left. And finally, it's like 10:30 at night. Mom, I'm tired. Let's go. No, no, we're going to stay. No, I'm tired, Mom. We're going to go. We go. And apparently, Master comes down and says, where are my children? And nobody's there. Yeah, and it was just, you know, piercing the heart. So you couldn't gotten us away the next night. You were there. But the only other thing I wanted to tell you then was, now, my mother and I are spending our lives trying to see the radiant form inside and just, you know, everything. My grandmother dies. I'm up with my grandparents in Missouri. My dad comes up. And my dad was never initiated. This is the point of the whole story, because I know a lot of us here are initiates in different ways or families or anything. My dad, who was never initiated, sees in the flowers at the end of my grandmother's coffin Kerpal's face, Master's face. So, good affirmations.
I apologize. I didn't want to put my dear sister on the spot, but, you know, we must have known each other at St. Bonnie. And the story you told about Chicago dovetailed with my experience so much. What is your name?
Oh, Jessica Webb, but I was known as PJ back then.
PJ, okay, my name is Alan, and I was at St. Bonnie, 71, 72, 73, and on. And with my wife and that baby, we left Chicago in 70, 71. Chicago was aflame then. Racial warfare, drugs, politics. And we said, look, this is we need some sanity. So we joined the Cultural Revolution. I don't know if we hippies, I don't know, we didn't particularly want to wear a uniform or anything, but, you know, we didn't have any money. And there in New Hampshire said, live free or die. So we found an old house in New Hampshire and we remodeled it. Anyway, we got initiated, and my wife's parents are still in Chicago, and they were against this whole thing. And we have the baby. And my father-in-law was the top lawyer for the American Medical Association. And if you knew that, this was revulsion at first sight of that. It was not mixing, it was like mixing like water and oil and water. And we were afraid he was going to want to get custody of the baby because we were raising the baby as a vegetarian. Anyway, Master goes on tour. He goes to Chicago. And we say, well, we have to go to Chicago. We can't avoid Chicago. And we go to Chicago, and we stay with her parents. And my mother-in-law, Claire Bluesky, says, could I go see your master? And I'm taking offense because here I am, a hippie, counterculture. And she's, you say, but Niles, you know, she was a teacher. And I say, well, you don't want to, do you? She said, no, I'm interested in this. I want to go see him. I said, okay, you can go see him. And I forget the name of the hotel that he was staying at. Tip of my tongue, I forget the hotel. Yeah, in Chicago. And he gives a talk. My mother-in-law is sitting next to me, and she's just saying, this is the most handsome, beautiful man I've ever seen. I hear her saying this. And I'm, you know, it's like, what's going on here? I'm not seeing what she's seeing. And I say, no, he's just an old gut sick with a turban. He says, he's so beautiful, I want to be initiated. That's the thing. She's asking me, could I be initiated? I said, well, no, you don't want to be. You have to be a vegetarian. And she says, I don't care. I'll eat lettuce. I don't care. I want to be initiated. So she went and she got initiated. But then my father-in-law, her husband, who just didn't show any interest whatsoever, says, I want to see this master too. And he was going to give a talk at the Unity Church or something. I forget what church it was in Chicago. Unitarian Church in Chicago. Like, you're there, but he was he showed absolutely no interest in him, but he's going to see. And so I went with him. And he's sitting with us. And then I said, at least he can't get initiated. His master was giving the last talk then, and then he was leaving. So master's talking, and he stands up. There must have been hundreds of people there. He stands up, and he's looking around. He says, what's happening? What's happening? And here is where he wants to know where the light is coming from. And he said, well, I want to get initiated too. Could I get initiated? I said, no, master's leaving. He's leaving the next day. Too late. You can't do it. And then Master comes out and says, well, there's so much interest that I'm spending another day. They got initiated. Now, was I happy, enjoyed, and wonderful? Sort of, but sort of, what's going, you know, how come they got initiated? They weren't even vegetarians, because when Master went on tour, he initiated people who just said they would become vegetarians. And I had to go through everything. I had to study the books. I had to be a vegetarian. Physically. I had to leave Chicago and join the counterculture.
Well, hello, Joyce Stone. I got initiated in 1973, and the following year, Master passed, and I felt very sad, to say the least. I felt just empty inside, and I still went. I went with the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club. We had our meetings there. I think it was every Tuesday, with Etta Perrin and all that. And she was getting, she had gotten ill or something in her husband, so she left. She was having a Benta, a lady by name Benta. She was from Denmark, I think. She had a strong accent. Anyway, she started doing her, and she would make me come up and read. And I don't read. Well, I was a nervous wreck. And she, because I was so introverted, she said, come. I said, oh. So I just prayed, oh, help me through this. So I wanted to get up on that stage because I knew Master had been on that stage. And I was in the same stage. And I would do it just for that, you know. And then after Master passed, everyone got, when I went to the meeting still, but everyone was confused and saying who the successor was and who's Master, you know, and they got argumentative a little bit, you know. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, I need to withdraw. I need to get out and leave. I have to leave the group. But I'm not leaving. I said to myself, Master, I'm initiated by him. I don't care who else takes over, but I'm going to be staying with my Master, San Kripal. Because I read, every time I would go there, my husband would drop me off. I would talk to this girl in the back, Eva, and she would sell books. So I thought, I'm going to buy a book every time I go. And so I had all these books. So I said, I don't need to go to the meetings anymore because there's too much controversy. So I'm just going to read my books and just leave. So fast forward, I had four little girls we have, and, you know, money was always tight, so I thought, well, I'll get a second job. I was a waitress at night and then paddle wheel queen. And during the day, I thought, well, I'll fill in. The kids are in school. I got a few hours. I want to go to this place called Brits. It was a department store. And in that department store, there was a vendor area. It was candy. And I saw an ad in the paper that they needed a cashier and a candy lady. And I thought, well, I'll just apply. Well, the guy, no one came to apply for the job, so when I went, he was more than happy to give me the job. So he gave me this job in this candy department. And that filled up my morning from like 10 to 2, and then at 5 I go to the next job. So anyway, this went on for like a year or so, and all of a sudden, this little candy area, I was in a circle, and then there was all kinds of clothing and all that. I saw this tall lady looking at scarves, and I stared. It was like 3 years later, 4 years later. I looked at her. I think that's that Benta lady. I said, she's the one that made me come up and read. And I said, she was the head of the sets. And I said, I wonder, whatever happened to everybody? You know, my thoughts started coming through. And she came by the candy, and she looked at it. And I said, can I give you a sample? She looked at, no, thank you. And she had her mother with her, and they would go into a little cafeteria right outside there. And I said, oh, I want to ask her so bad. But I couldn't bring myself to do it. So about a month later, I saw her again. I said, I have to ask her. Please let me ask her. So she came, and I said, well, she stops, I'm going to ask her. So lo and behold, she stopped and started staring at the turtles. And I said, can I offer you anything? She said, oh, no, no. I said, can I ask you something? And she said, what? I said, she didn't even recognize me. That was a funny thing. It was weird. I said, do you still have Satsan? you know, meetings? And she looked at me kind of funny. She says, well, what? Why would you ask me that? I said, because I used to be there. I was an initiative sent compulsing. She says, I don't remember you. I said, well, I remember you. And she said, well, I said, I don't know what's going on, you know, whatever happened, you know, like 4 or 5 years later. She said, well, no, we don't have anyone, but I know people that we could get together again. And but I don't have anywhere to go, really. So she said, let me have your name and number. Maybe I can contact other people. And we can get a little circle going again in Kripal Singh's name. I said, oh, well, okay. So I gave her my name and number. And she found a little church that would loan her a room for our little gathering. And that lasted for a little bit. And then they stopped that. So then she said, well, no, I know. Now I have a friend that has an office, a real estate office. We can take that at like from 8 to 9:30. We can meditate together and be together and read master's books. So we went and did that. And then that fizzled out somehow. Then she said, well, I'm going to have you come to my house. So we got together at her house. Remember? Alan, do you remember going to Benta's house? I remember seeing you there. Yeah, at her house. Did you go any other place besides that place? Yeah, and then that broke off, and then I didn't see anybody anymore. And then I found her in the candy department, which was odd. And then we went to a couple more places, but I saw you at her place. And we did our meditations there, and her mother was there, and her brother had cancer, and he passed, and her mother passed. And then she got a little an apartment in a condo on the beach, Lauderdale by the Sea, and she invited everybody over there. So then we went all over there. But that's how I dropped off the path as a group, satsang group, but I never fell away from master. But I got reunited again through the candy department. And how soon is that?
Well, very quickly, I was born in 1977, so I don't have any Master Kripal Singh stories. I do need to leave early. I wanted to thank Olivia and John for welcoming me here, even though I didn't officially register. I'd like to say I met a lot of beautiful people here. It's been a great 28 hours, and I think you guys represent a great legacy for Master Kripal Singh here. I look forward to meeting, communicating with you guys in the coming months. Thank you.
Is this on? Yeah. Oh, man, this has been wonderful listening to everybody's stories. And my wife asked me, she says, well, what story are you going to tell? I said, oh, I'm going to wait for Master to tell me because I'm not sure. But I too, didn't have a chance to ever go to India and wanted to and had plans to. So I met Master on the 72 tour, like a lot of us here. And it came through my beautiful friend. I cry a lot, so forgive me if that pops out. I'm sorry. My very beautiful friend, Bobby Shave. And we shared the same sport, which was golf, and he was my mentor and my teacher for that. And, yeah, thank you. So she knows well. So anyway, he had a special golf teacher that I'd heard about, and one day we were sitting in the club and eating lunch, and I knew Bobby's a vegetarian. I wasn't sure why. I never asked. I was living a typical college life, and I don't need to tell you what that means probably. But at any point, you know, one assistant pro shows up, and he says, Bobby says that the master's here, isn't he? And Bobby looks at his watch, and he says, oh, yeah, he's landing in Washington. Well, that registered in my ear, and I thought, well, maybe this is the master golfer. I've been wanting to hear about this guy. So we go out, and we're hitting golf balls in the afternoon, and he's hitting them, and I'm hitting them, and I just got to ask him. So I said, Bobby, who's the master? And he goes, what? And I said, yeah, who's the master? Well, he turns around, and we didn't hit another golf ball after that. We just talked and talked and talked and talked, and I think I was floating off the ground by the time he was done. And it was like everything I was waiting for my entire life. In fact, I had a presence when I was a child of praying, and it was like in a bubble, like a light bubble. And as soon as he showed me Master's picture, that was it. I said, oof, I'm done. So it got dark. Like I said, we didn't hit another golf ball. I went home, told the whole world. And, of course, everybody thought I was nuts. But, you know, Bobby called me one day, says, you want to go to satsang? I said, well, what's that? So he told me, and we went to Jerry's Astra Turks Miami Satsang, and I think a lot of people in here know Jerry, and we always kid that she was a real force of nature, if you will. She loved Master very much. And I went there with my girlfriend, and she scared her to death, and I was just like mesmerized. And she had a picture, big picture of Master, and they would sing the bhajan, and then pretty similar to the way we conduct satsang now, and then we meditated. So then Bobby said, again, you want to go again? And I said, yes. And then finally he said, well, you know, Master's coming. I said, he's coming. He says, yeah, he's coming in December. So fortunately, in God's perfect plan, my school ended on December 5th. And Master came on December 6th. So I was done with school. And he said, oh, I'm going to come by and pick you up. He says, is Sue going to go? That was my girlfriend, and we were going to get married. I said, no, I don't think so. So we went, and all his children were initiated. And, of course, if anybody saw Master come in on the airport in Miami, I mean, he has his entourage. And, of course, I didn't know what to expect. And I listened enough at Astra's satsang to learn a few things. And it always struck me that all you saw was Master. I mean, all these people, all I could just see was him. You know, it was like this light was on. So and then he took us to the, we all followed the entourage to the Gull Ocean Mile, and I sat for the first time in meditation, and I was fortunate enough to have an experience, and I thought, wow, this is really something. And every day we had a different event. I don't remember the exact days, so forgive me, but one day we went to the Gull Ocean Mile. I think a lot of us in here were probably there. And people say, go ask Master a question. I said, no, I can't do it. I was too embarrassed. You know, I felt impure. I don't know if I realize that's ego now. But I just couldn't. What could you say to God? You know, what could I possibly say to him that was going to make any difference? But then we had the Unitarian, I think it was Unity Church or Unitarian, and it was in, I think, where's Rosemary? Is she here? Yeah, it was Unity. And oh my goodness, I mean, you couldn't get in. I mean, it was packed. Everybody was standing up, people outside. And I couldn't understand Master, but it didn't matter. You know, I just wanted to see him and hear his voice. In fact, my wife, all she has to do is hear Master's voice and changes her whole day. You know, she doesn't understand everything he says necessarily, but just listening. That's probably true for a lot of us. So then we had to Stranahan High School, and that was the last day. And I've told this story before, but I'll share it with you because it's the most impactful thing that happened to me with Master. So Astra used to say, he said, don't try and direct Master's darshan. And I wasn't really sure what that meant at the time. But basically, it was don't run around trying to get him to look at you to give him your darshan. So I remembered that. So when the talk was done, I was sitting in the middle aisle, Bobby and I and my girlfriend at the time. And we were about two-thirds back. And you know how high schools are. They have an aisle on either side and another bank of seats and an aisle on the other side of the bank of seats. And Master came down our aisle. I thought, this is good. And so he got to a little bit closer than where Rudy is, maybe over in here somewhere, and he looked right at me. Woof, that was it. Done. And to Rick's point, I mean, you can't explain, at least I couldn't until that point. I mean, it was like the lights came on, and he knew everything about me. I felt naked in a sense. I felt guilty in a sense. But then I felt so uplifted. I didn't know what to do. I was almost trembling. And so he went by, and I kind of didn't say anything. And finally, I nudged Bobby. He said, oh, now I'm scared. I said, Bobby, I have to get initiated. I have to get initiated. He said, yeah, come on. We'll go talk to Jerry. So we went outside, and anybody knew Jerry. She wasn't very tall, and she wore very fanciful clothes a lot of times, and she kind of had a turban on. And she'd look up at you, and she was always kind of looking at your aura. She wasn't necessarily looking at Jerry. She said, oh, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. And I'm thinking, okay. So long story short, I signed initiation papers. And also, I think to Alan's point, you know, I'd only been a vegetarian like the day before. I said, oh, the Master's coming. I got to, you know, because Master made exceptions on the tour for like Alan was talking. So it was at the Fort Lauderdale Woman's Club. And I want to make darn sure that I got there. I wasn't late, and which was a bad habit of mine at any rate. So and I don't remember exactly. It was almost like a block, as I remember. And it was a main street, and I parked on the side. And I started walking up, and you know, born and raised, lived my whole life in Miami. And it was December 10th, so it wasn't the rainy season. And all of a sudden, it starts raining just over the building. And I thought, boy, this is weird. And I mean, I was getting a little wet while I was walking in. And I didn't think much more about that. We had the most beautiful time of initiation. I found out later that Rudy was with me. We were one of the 91 that was there. And I didn't know him till later, obviously. But on Monday, we had our satsangs on Monday night at a bank building. On Biscayne Boulevard. And we all came in, and everybody was all excited because Master, you know, had just left, and we were talking about everything that had gone on. And she said, anybody notice that it was raining over the building? And I raised my hand. I said, yeah. She goes, that's Samhain. Well, I didn't know what that was at the time either. And then I realized, and it really was. It was just a spectacular blessing. And I'd never had a better vegetarian meal in my life because everybody was preparing the food. And there's one other story I'll tell. I think Jim asked me last time, and I didn't tell it, but I told it once before. And it's sort of mundane, but it's a worldly kind of a story, but it just shows you how Master gives you these little tidbits at any rate. So I'd always been a real fan of watching football. And, you know, about 4 or 5 years later, I'm married to a lady who's also initiated, and she liked football. And it was the end of the season, and we're in Miami, so we're Dolphin fans. And my buddy calls me up, and he says, Stu, he says, you want to go to the game? I said, well, I don't have any tickets. So, you know, he said, well, I don't know if it's going to get sold out. Well, if games aren't sold out, then somebody would buy the tickets, and then or you couldn't watch it on TV. So he was a very successful realtor. His father and my father had founded the Kendall Pine Board of Realtors, so we all knew each other. And he said, Dad's going to go, and we'll park in his buddy's space in front of the stadium. I said, okay. I said, I'll go. I said, Connie, you want to go? She goes, yeah. So it's either Friday night or Saturday night. I can't remember what day the game was. And it's raining. So I said, you guys have tickets? He said, no, I gave it away to one of my clients. He said, well, we don't have any tickets either. I said, well, you can go down to the Orange Bowl and you can buy them. So it's like 8 o'clock. I call up, and they say, well, we're open till 9. That's raining now, right? And I'm probably about 30 minutes away. So I said to her, I said, you want to go? She says, yeah, come on, let's go, whatever. So we go and we pull up, and it's drizzling. We drive up my little Chevette, and the window's right there. And it's like 8:45. We got like 15 minutes to buy these tickets. And so long story short, I know the Orange Bowl really well. I grew up there, and so you have this one bank of seats like this and another bank of seats over the top. If you sit underneath those high enough, the bank of seats on top will keep you dry. So I said to the girl, I said, honey, show me what you got. So she said, we got this, we got this. This is section Y, this is section S. I said, how about those two seats right there? We'll take those up underneath the O-rank. She was like, great, pay him. Next day, my buddy picks me up. His father's driving the car. We pull up right in front of the stadium, stay at his buddy's house. Because around the stadium, they had all these houses, and people would make money letting people park there to go into the game. So we walk down the street, and typically somebody will hold up two fingers, I need two tickets, or if they have tickets, they hold up two tickets. So I said, oh, Mr. Cadman, I said, look, there's a guy. I'll go see if he's got two tickets. It looks like he's got two tickets. Only guy walking into the stadium, not a block and a half long. And I said, what do you want for the tickets? Well, he wasn't charged any more than what they normally cost. I said, Charlie, come here, bud. So he says, Dad, let's buy these. Buys the two tickets. I said, look, we're at the same gate. So we go in. It was gate Y, as I recall. So we're walking in, and we go to sit down, and we're the same aisle. We go to sit down, and we got the exact four seats, the two seats I bought the night before and the two seats that we hit with this guy randomly, and the 80,050 amount of people stayed in. I don't know. There's no stat you could even calculate that about. And I said, my wife and I looked at it. I said, well, we kind of knew it was Master had created that little indulgence for us, and it was just one more, you know, emphasis that Master's always with us and always. And his father couldn't believe it. Where are they sitting? Oh, Pop, they're sitting here. Oh, are they just sitting here because there's not enough people here? No, Dad, their seats are here. So he couldn't believe it. But at any rate, I don't want to hog up any more time. Sally, I'm praying you tell that story about John. Can you do it?
So just a little background. I'm from Charlotte. I'm originally from Charleston, South Carolina, but Mama moved up to Charlotte. Mama and Daddy did in 1968. And Daddy left. And he left Mama, just left her. And she knew no one. And she was a nurse, and so she went and worked night duty. So she'd be with us in the day. And I went to school, and I don't remember doing this, but one day I brought home this flyer, Great Concepts, Myers Park High School. Of course, it was Charlie Fulcher. So Mama goes, and I think, I don't know, Ricky, if you were there, but it's a whole bunch of y'all, you know, Bill Dawson and Jimmy Alexander and all those. And so that's how Mama became aware of Master. So she, of course, we follow Master and on his tour a number of places. And we end up at Charlie's, and we're the two that were the two young children that were sort of that were initiated into the sound current. And it was amazing. And it was overwhelming and amazing. And we, you know, Master passes away, which is horrible. And we start growing up, and I was not a great initiate when I was a teenager, and I fell off the path. I mean, there were just other things going on, and I was not a good initiate. So when I was 26, I had thought that, you know, I wasn't enjoying things, and I ended up having a vision of Master, which put me back on the path. And we've talked about these things, and I told John about it. John would come to all of these, you know, meetings, and he would think to himself, John Tracy was my stepfather, who was married to my mother. It was a wonderful marriage, and they were meant for each other. And to himself, he would think, well, this person tells this story, and this person tells this story, but I've never seen Master. I mean, I've never seen him in the flesh, because everyone had gone to India or had seen him in 1972. So Master works in mysterious ways. And my parents had moved up to Fancy Gap, Virginia. And occasionally, Charlie and Jimmy would come up. And in this instance, they came up and were talking. And they were just sitting around talking. And they were talking about seeing Master in India and about Master coming to the United States. And John said, you know, it's too bad I never saw Master. I would like to have seen him. But I was initiated too late. And he said, you know, Charlie initiated me in August, the second week in August. And Charlie looks at John and goes, John, I think you're incorrect. I was not here in the United States in August. And John goes, well, you were, because you initiated me. And Jimmy and Charlie are like, no, we were in India with Master at that time. John goes, wait a second, let me get my initiation papers. So he brings them in. Sure enough, there it is, signed by Charlie Fulcher. And Charlie goes, huh. So he says, so tell me what happened, John. John goes, well, Charlie, you picked me up from my mother's house early in the morning. I mean, it was you in the car. And he said, I remember you pulled out of the parking, out of the driveway, and you hit a couple of moms' liriope, and you got out of the car, which I thought was kind of funny, and you very gently patted them back into place. You know, which, you know, they were liriope plants, yeah. Which I thought was rather odd, because Charlie wasn't really like that. And he gets back in, and he's driving, and they're not talking, and they're driving up to North Carolina, Virginia, Washington, trying to get John to the right place to get initiated. Well, it doesn't turn out right. I mean, it's just that they go from one place to another, and finally they drive in, Charlie drives in, and along the drive, Charlie is very, very quiet, which he normally is quiet, but he's very quiet. And John would kind of look at him once in a while and say, well, are we, you know, going well, or how's the trip going well? And, you know, try to engage Charlie and talk. And Charlie would turn to him and say, I am only interested in the subtlest of the subtle. And then he would turn back and he would drive. And just, you know, Charlie was quirky, but this was really kind of different. So John eventually gets initiated. And he gets signed off. Charlie signs off underneath. And they drive back. And it's very quiet. And John is elated. He's very happy he's gotten initiated. And he gets back to the house. And Charlie drives him back in. He says, thank you very much. And Charlie doesn't say much. And he drives away. This is 30 years later when he finds this out. And Charlie's sitting there and he goes, that was not me, John. That was Master, who came to get you initiated because I was not there. And, of course, John is blown away, because after spending 30 years of going, well, I've heard your story and your story and your story, he has the most incredible story of Master driving him in Charlie Fulcher's body, you know, or more the image of his form to get initiated. So I thought that was... We were all very, very happy for him, and that he was blessed, and that is a blessing. He was blessed with that, that everyone else had seen him in our family in person, but he really had the best, I mean, the most wonderful. It was amazing. Master's grace.
I happened to be at the satsang when that revelation came out. And it was like, whoa. That has to be my top number one story about the Master. And, yeah, and I was glad I was there to get it. I just want to make a quick comment that I have become aware of the fact that many of us have been together before in satsangs. Miami, Fort Lauderdale. I was at Rudy and Scott's initiation. I was there. But I was there as Seva to help with what was going on at that time when Master came to Fort Lauderdale. And it's like we are a family. We've been to all these satsangs. I was in Chicago when Master was in Chicago. And it's like we're a family. We are a family of the Master.
Well, I have a story. I did see Master. I was very fortunate to see Master in 1972 in Godelsham Mile. However, at the time, I was going with somebody that was very negative about it. However, my mother-in-law, she knew I was looking, and she says, I have to give you this. And she gave me a cutout of the newspaper of Master being at Godelsham Mile. And I said, oh, that's it. I'm going to go. And I asked him, I said, you want to come? I'm going. So we both ended up going. In the meantime, he kept whispering in my ear, I don't know about this, you know, negative things. And we couldn't find a place to park when we got there. And I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to miss it. So we finally got in, and there was people everywhere. But walked in the door, and I heard this voice saying, Master's coming. You know, all these people are saying this. And I turn around, and there he is coming through the door in Godelsham Mile. And I didn't know what to do. I was like, I don't know, what am I supposed to do? Because this was all new. I had no idea. And we listened to the talk, and I remember them talking. They were going to be at Birch State Park, and I'm like, oh, I can't go. I got to work. And so time went on, and about another year, and he said, well, you know, so-and-so wants to tell you something. She's going to these meetings. You might be interested in going. And this was in Miami. Jerry Turk, and so I started going to the satsang in Miami, and she would go, Jerry would obviously go to India every summer, and so at that particular time, I start, oh, you know, there's one in Fort Lauderdale, there's one in Lake Worth, I'm just going to keep on going to the satsangs, you know, and nobody asked me about, are you ever going to be initiated, until I got to the Lake Worth satsang, and this was during when Jerry was gone in the summer, of course, and I put in my initiation papers. And this was in July. And then we found out in August he had left the body. And I was always by myself. I was always going to the satsangs by myself. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I can't go on like this. Oh, my goodness. But then this voice kept saying, do what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep going where you're going. So I kept going to the Miami. I kept going to Fort Lauderdale. And then I kept going to the Lake Worth. I was going a little bit more. And a gentleman came up and finally they said, actually, I was working for Publix at the time. And I got a call. You need to call this person. I called him. And he said, you've been verbally accepted. You're going to have initiation. I screamed, and I was on the payphone in front of Publix. And everybody was like, what happened? But it was just the most marvelous feeling in the world to just have that opportunity and to be able to see him. And you know when you see him, you never, ever forget that. Even though I didn't know what was going on at the time, it's just blessed that is still with me to this very day.
My name is Rudy Cascone. I'm going to start with when I took a plane to India for the Unity of Man conference, and I ended up, Cuckoo and Eileen picked us up at the airport, and my bags were shipped to Bangkok, so I didn't have any bags to carry with me, no nothing to wear, and just my little shaving kit, you know, so I'm walking in the ashram, and I'm taking it in with me because they said, leave everything outside. But this was the only thing I had. So I said, oh, my God, I'll take it with me. I'll keep it with me. So I had it behind my back, but I really felt guilty afterwards. So. But anyway, I get in. And Master, first image of Master, he was lying down on a bench. And he's laying there, beautifully comfortable, easy, comfortable. He moves and he starts to sit up. And I thought that, oh, my God, he was huge. He was really huge, like a giant Buddha, just standing up there, you know, just wonderful. And so he got us into the room. He said, oh, do you have any problems, anything wrong? And I looked at Master. My mind went completely blank. Oh, my God. I said, no. I'm perfectly happy here. I don't have any problems at all. I forgot about my baggage and anything like that. It didn't mean anything. So, but what was happening was, I looked at Master, and all of a sudden these waves started coming across in this room, and it was just wonderful. And I believe it was the love waves coming in like that, but. But what Marcia had read today just brought it back to me that this is God's presence everywhere. You know, this is God's presence everywhere. It's just floating to you. And you're living in there like a little fish in an ocean. And I felt like that. I just felt like a little fish inside a whole ocean. And it was just wonderful, you know, to be there. And I thought, wow, this is a different world that I'm in here. This is a wonderful world. But anyway, the Unity of Man conference is going along, and they didn't have anybody to hold up the banner for Greece, so they gave me that job. So I was walking, you know, walking through New Delhi, you know, and going to the Manila grounds. But when you get there, this was on Master's birthday, and Master, everyone knew that Master would wear Baba Sawan Singh's coat. You know, it was a big thing. So when Master came on the stage, he had Master's Baba Sawan Singh's coat on, and it was a big wave of woo went over the whole audience. And in the middle of this audience, this gal stands up and sings a beautiful love song to Master, all by herself, amongst these thousands of people. And it was just a beautiful love song out of a heart, just a heartfelt thing. And I'm looking up there, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, okay, this is wonderful, but, you know, this is really great to be here. I'd love to stay here, but how would I do that? I mean, how would I stay here? And I thought, well, you know, I can marry one of these Indian gals over here. That would be a good idea, you know, and I could stay here for 90 years, you know, like that. You know, so during an intermission, I'm going and I meet one of the attendants there. One of the attendants there is called Bridge Mohan, who had wonderful experiences of Master, and later on Master grounded him because he had too many experiences, and he told him, look, if you if you continued like this, they'll come to you and they won't see me, so I'm taking this all away from you. So anyway, I met him and he says, Rudy, would you like some tea? So I said, yes, okay, I'll go in. And he made some tea for me. He sat me down and he said, look, you see that doorway over there? Yes, there's three girls there. Do you like any of them? So I said, oh, Master, I really realized that. No, I was only kidding, Master, really. No, not right now. Not right now. I'm not ready to get married an Indian girl.
You thought about it.
Yeah, I did. One of them looked like my mother, I tell you. It was a yeah. But I'm going to jump right to the last day, the last day that we're leaving. And, you know, when you go to Jerry Turk's satsang, you know, you get all these, you get this information, you know, and she says, oh, I've been to India so long. And when you meet Master and he gives you prasad, you have to place your hands in a receiving manner, you know, and this is the proper way to do it. You put your hands in front of you and you receive the prasad and you wait for Master to drop it in. You know, so I said, okay, you know, I'm going to be a dutiful disciple. I'm going to do thus chat. So Master's got the prasad and he's taking it. He takes his hand, he puts it way up in the air like this, all the way high up like this. And I'm looking at him and said, what is he doing? He's putting his hand all the way up here. So I said, I took my hand, I grabbed it, you know. And he looked at me, and he big smile on his face, you know. He looked at me, and later on, I really thought about it, as I really thought. I said, you know, love knows no rules, you know, no rules at all. I got one other story, but all right. It's a sad story, but anyway, while at the Unity of Man conference, I was sitting with the initiates there. They had a special section for them. About 400 Westerners were given the privilege of sitting close to the Master when he was there. So I was leaning up against the post, and Master was up there, and I was looking at him and concentrating, and all of a sudden I saw this image of Master leaving the earth plane, and he had a silver face. He was laying down. It was I call it his death mask, you know, his death mask. But you know, I'm thinking about it, and you're just overwhelmed with sadness and crying, and you know, so tears were just rolling down there. I couldn't control it. It was just very emotional, just very emotional. And because Master was everything to you, at me at that time. He was just everything. He was my whole life, you know. So if he's your whole life and you have something like that hit you, all this emotion, my soul was just destroyed, you know. It was just a terrible thing. So, but anyway, he knew that I really didn't understand everything all about it. So, as we were going to the langar for food, I couldn't eat a thing, at all. So, and Master sent this Indian gentleman to come over and to explain it again to me. So he sent him over to our table. And he's coming over, and I know Master sent him. He's sending him over, and he's sitting down over there, and I'm feeling more sad every time he's getting closer to me. And he's sitting there, he's going like this. He's making circles, and Master's going up. He's going to be leaving, you know. Oh, my God. So Bruno Savina says, oh, yeah, that's just the way you go up. You know, everybody goes up that way. So I knew that was funny, but what a sad day. What a sad day. So it's just a great thing. But you probably want to hear about some of the experiences I had coming to the path. You know, I'll just give it just a few of them. I was praying in the middle of my living room in Massapequa, Long Island. Because I was stuck there. I didn't know what to do. I was in a drug culture and things like that, and I didn't know where I was going to go. I was 37 years old, So I said, oh my God, what am I going to do? I can't live like this anymore. So I knelt down in the middle of my living room, and I said a real sincere prayer from my heart. And I said, oh God, take me out of this. Bring me to a place where there's truth and there's people there that love truth, and take me there, please. But it was such a sincere prayer that I knew instinctively that God was listening and he would hear my prayer. And sure enough, a couple of months later, I was traveling to Florida, and my cousin was a yoga teacher there. And she lived on the beach in Fort Lauderdale, on Hallandale, actually, in Hallandale. So when I touched her fingers and I said hello to her, this current come right through me. It was the most beautiful current. I mean, it was such a real thing. And it always reminds me of that Vedantic saying, you know, lead me from the unreal to the real. This was real. This was real. Something I could base my life on. So I said, okay, this is where I'm going to get it. So I sold my apartment. I know, I didn't sell it. I just left it. Left my apartment and moved to Florida because I knew I was going to get it there. And luckily, my cousin had two initiates living in the same apartment complex that she was renting out. And I started to read some of the booklets that they had. And my cousin said, you know, you're moving down here. There must be a reason for it. And it must be this master who's coming, Sankarpal Singh. He'll be here at the Galt Ocean Mile Hotel in Florida. And so during that time, I started to hear trumpets in my head. So I started to hear these trumpet sounds. So they sounded similar to this thing, like, and it was going along, all along. I mean, for days. So like for this, I hear trumpets, and I look out the window. I said, maybe a taxi's coming by or something. You know, no, nothing like that. It's in my head. So the day comes when Master's there at the Galt Ocean Mile Hotel. We all get in the car, traveling along, and we got into a mile before the hotel, dead silence. No trumpets, no nothing. And there's Master up on the stick, walking to the stage. My cousin says, oh, he looks just like a big babe. You know, just big, beautiful babe sitting there, simple, sweet, you know, just a innocent babe. And she looked at me, she said, Rudy, you have this pink aura all around you, you know. And so they were going to take the initiation papers, but my cousin's husband wouldn't take the papers because he was a meat eater and he didn't like the stipulation that you have to be a vegetarian. And Ben Ringel said, you want the papers too? I said, yes, I do. I want the papers. Please give me the papers. So I took the initiation papers, and we got home. And I still had some doubts about whether he was authentic. He was an authentic master. And I told him to her, and she said, oh, you're just as dumb as my husband. Go sit on the beach, you know. Go sit out on the beach there with him. He's just as stupid as you are, you know. So anyway, the next day is the initiation day, and my cousin told me, sit in the front door row, you know, and make sure you get a good view of Master. So, but before that, there was one other day before, one other talk that Master gave at the Stranahan High School. So I went there, and I looked at the booklets that were out on the table, and I saw Mystery of Life, the Wheel of Life, and the Mystery of Death. So I said, that's a great book to get. But I also saw Spirituality, and I thought, well, Spirituality probably would be the best book for me because I'm a beginner, you know. So I picked that book. And I went and I sat down on one of the rows, And I opened the book, and as I opened the book, this light flashes out of the book. Big flashy light. And this fellow behind me sees that thing, too. He sees it, too. So he corroborated. He came around, and he said, look in this book. In this book, there's a paragraph that says, you can take this initiation as a experimental trial. And you could do that. It says that in Spiritual Elixir. So, but I was being convinced already, I think, you know, because that was something. And then the next day was Master's initiation. So I went in and sat down, and Master was there. So, but during the day, I've been watching Master so long, my eyes were sort of protruding a little bit from their sockets. So they were, I couldn't, my eyelids were a little bit hard to hold down. So during the initiation, my eyes opened up, and there was Master on the stage. And he looked at me, and he says, oh, you caught me. So I looked at him. I said, oh, no, you didn't catch me. I didn't catch you. You caught me. And then I said, who are you? Who are you? I was talking to him with my mind. And he said, no, well, I'm not this. He started to just take off different, parts of himself, different cultures, I would say. Different cultures were, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this, I'm not that one, I'm not this, you know. And then he came down off the stand, and he said, okay. He made me bend my head over, he put his hands on my eyes and pushed my eyeballs back in my sockets. Yeah. And he said, okay, then this is the way you're supposed to look. So that was my initiation.
Rudy, I remember that. I remember he came down.
Yes. Yes. So, David, don't you have anything, David? No, you don't have anything. How about you, Olivia?
I think we should give special thanks for Anelia, who is taking care of the prashad and doing it due diligently, making sure everybody got their fair share. And then, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know that behind that curtain, there was the Wiz, who was taking care of all of the videos and all of the movies and all of the whatevers. Thank you very much for doing your job. Thank you.
Oh, yes, we did before.
Thank you.
No, it's fine.
You know, I did not have an opportunity to meet Master. I did write for permission, and I was ticketed. I had a ticket to go to India. Unfortunately, he passed before I could get there. But even so, in saying that, he has been with all of us since before we were born. When I was very small, my mother was hospitalized for a number of years. And so I would talk to God and have conversations with him. I was only 5 and 6 and 7 years old, and I would talk to God. By the time I was 12, I could hear the sound current. And so I didn't know what it was, and there wasn't anybody to tell me. And so I was raised a Catholic, and at the age of 18, I was standing in the back of the church, and it just didn't make sense. So I left the church, and I walked home saying to myself, there has to be a better way to honor God. It took a couple of years to find Master. I was initiated by Etta Parent. But I think that we have found the better way.
One of the upsides of my job, Pradeep mentioned that he contacted me at some point. A little more detail. He called me up and he said he wanted one of everything. I knew that there had to be a story behind that, so I let him explain himself a little more carefully. It was a really fun day for both of us. When I was in college, my roommate dropped out after the first year. He went to Vermont. He was a hippie, I guess, 1963, 64. Anyway, he ended up at the ashram in Vermont. He was really thrilled with the people there. They were so cool. He came back and we shared an apartment in Boston. He had the macrobiotic diet, the path, and LSD all wrapped up in a ball. And you couldn't understand really what any of them were. And I just kind of laughed him off, and certainly being a vegetarian sounded like a lot of work. But eventually he got hold of the book, The Path of the Masters by Julian Johnson, and he loaned it to me because he was getting tired of my stupid questions. I was working as a security guard, so I'm out there at midnight. I get through about 40 minutes into the book. I went out in the parking lot and I danced. I knew this was it. It had found me, I had found it. I remember that. I'm not the type of guy that dances out in the parking lot.
I'm tempted to pass the mic, but I've been sitting here and thinking, I'm similar to many people. You know, I had experiences from like age of five, and by the time I was an adolescent teen, it was a lot of theosophy, a lot of Edgar Cayce, a lot of Great White Brotherhood, combined with Sri Aurobindo and Bhagavad Gita, and I knew that I needed a guide on the inner planes, and that was what I was searching for. I was searching for a guide. So, thankfully, Master came into my life. I received initiation in 1971. And the beauty of that is I was in Miami, and as you've heard people talk about the satsangs, I was able to attend the Miami satsang with Etta Parent, the Miami satsang with Jerry Astor Turk, the Fort Lauderdale, which at that time was also Etta Parent. And then I moved to Tallahassee, and I had little small group gatherings in Tallahassee. And if they wanted initiation, I would take them down to Sunny Cowan. So I got to see the St. Petersburg satsang. So when Master did come on tour, I had a young child. My wife and I was in college. We were only able to go to St. Petersburg, the different visits in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And I have no specific memories, unlike all of you, that can share beautiful stories. For me, it was all just sort of a combination of being very tired, I guess because of the baby, looking after different people that were traveling with us, but also it was all just so surreal and so surrealistic. It was just so hard to describe the whole trip, and it went by so fast. But one of the things that I'm grateful for with Master's blessings is his legacy. And to me, the legacy is his beautiful satsangs. No matter what satsang I went to, the people were beautiful. The people were Master's people. And just like we have tonight, all of us are Master's people. For me, we're his legacy. And so I haven't seen another initiate in 50 years. I've been on the path the whole time, but I never gave my email addresses or whatever. Somehow I've been not communicating. But Master's always been with me. I think sometimes people get to see Master in me, and I know that I see Master in each of you, and for that I'm very grateful. Thank you.
We're in Florida following Master, and we were in St. Pete. I'm not sure exactly where we were, but he did two and a half talks at a high school auditorium, I believe. And when he would get through with the talk, Mr. Connor would say, "Everybody just stay seated." And then when Master starts coming down, then you can form lines on both sides of the sidewalk as he goes out and get his darshan. So we did that, and the first day I saw him, I noticed that when he came out the door, he looked one way, this another way, and another way without saying anything, just with his folded hands looking at people. So the second day I saw him, and he did the exact same thing. Looked in that, didn't say anything to this person. I said, "I think I have him figured out." So I got to the third place where he was. Now, this is how kind he was to naive people. So sure enough, he comes out. He looks that way, to that way, or the other way. Well, anyway, he looked exactly where I was standing. And it looked like he was just going to go by, but he turned back and he said, "Yes."
I have a quick story. Mother was initiated in 68. I was initiated in 69. And I moved to Oxford, Mississippi, to the university in 80. My brother was coaching football there. And his kids were little, and I was newly divorced, and I thought, I'll just go up and do Faulkner for a year, and stayed for 10 years. But I couldn't do Faulkner because all the people were on sabbatical and everything, so I wandered to the philosophy department, and they hired me right off the street because I had a degree and I could do this, and they had nobody for their 8 o'clock miserable intro to philosophy classes with 60 people in a class and, you know, bunch of fraternity and sorority kids who'd rather not be there, and boy, were they happy to see me and hired me. So I've got a garage apartment. It was so rickety going up the stairs. It was, I had to hold on to the wall and not the banister. And I look out. It's right before school starts. I see these two little boys in the backyard playing, about 3 and 5. Oh, that's good. There's somebody moved in below me. The garage apartment below me was an apartment, too. She comes to Oxford thinking she's going to do midwifery, only that's with that's down in Jackson, where the medical center of the University of Mississippi is, not in Oxford, where the main campus is. And she's got to take some more classes anyway to get in there. I'm up there from Pensacola, and Georgia's, you know, George and Margaret and Satsang and everything. I'm up there, and Master puts us one above the other in this rickety garage, these two rickety garage apartments, and she with these two children, and me teaching philosophy, and just in case we missed each other, she was also in my class. So, that's Master. And by the way, my father, I forgot to tell you, the point of that story is, you know, and the pure of heart shall see God.
I want to say one more thing.
I'm taking over. He's shut. He's so tired. He's
pardon me. How many days are we going to do this? I have hours and hours to talk about the Master. Thank you, John, for that. Thank you. That made me have to tell Master's Parshad story. When I was traveling from Jacksonville to Miami to go to Satsang, someone had come from India and had parshad for everybody. And I had a big bag of parshad. And I was in Jacksonville, and I was going to go to college, and I was going to move. I had to move. And so I did. I made the move. the Parshad didn't make the move with me. It was lost. I mourned for years that Parshad. Master plans ahead. He knew. So the Parshad, that's the master. Oh, I just want to say one more thing. Charlene Sherwin received that Parshad when she was in India. And it was at Olivia's, and it, correct me if I'm wrong, that box was in your closet for 50 years?
No. No, she sent it to me for the 2020.
Charlene Sherwin sent me the box of Prashad for the 2020 retreat here at Lake Junaluska. But because of COVID, we had to cancel. So that box has been sitting under my table for a few years. And so Anilia and I got together talking about what we were going to do with this prasad. And then I sent it to you and said, here you go.
I had no idea how much it was going to be.
A lot. Turned out to be a lot. A lot of work. Thank you.
Yeah, so I have one other story that you probably all heard and you're probably tired of hearing it, but I'll tell it once more. It was when we were at the ashram. Well, the ashram master, the people that were coming there, they were thinking about staying at hotels in different parts of Delhi. But Master said, no, no, no. All the initiates that come are going to be staying here. We'll make room for them. And they started to build places for them to stay. They were just newly built, and they had cement on the walls and everything. I was in one of those buildings that they just had. The cement was still wet, you know, so I was I'd have my bunk, and I put my chair on top of my bunk, and I was meditating there. But anyway, walking across the courtyard one evening, and as it was a customary for Master to see the sick people in the evening, and this particular night, Edda Perrin's husband, Phil Perrin, had phlebitis in his legs, and I guess everyone knew that Master would go to see them, and so they gathered around in a huge crowd. So as I was passing along, I said, oh my God, look at these people. They're probably, you know, hampering Master from going to his to do his duties. So I said, I'm not going to go there. I'll go up to my room and meditate, you know. So I was being very noble, you know. So I started to walk across. The crowd opens up. And there is Master, and I always say this, it looks like an Hieronymus Bosch painting of Jesus Christ standing there all white, the light is shining, and all these dark figures around it, but his light is shining through. And Master's thought transference comes to me and says, hey, why don't you come and see this show? So I said, oh, well, Master wants me to see the show. How am I going to do this? So I said, well, I'll have to get up higher to see over everything and get a good aerial view of it. So I jumped up on a table, and Steve Malik thought I was nuts, you know, so such crazy guys on top of a table. But it's a good view. You have to see what's going on. Yogi Bhajan and Mr. Khanna and Master are there, and all of a sudden, things started to get orchestrated. The chairs were brought out. Master, one, two, three chairs were brought out, and they were sitting down, and Master Yogi Bhajan and Mr. Khanna had chairs to sit down on. And then Master's hand went up, and it was just like a wire puller up above pulling his hand up. And Master's mouth opened up. He was speaking. God was speaking through him. And he was just a puppet in the hand of God. And I looked at this whole scene. Oh, this is God orchestrating everything. This is what you wanted me to see. Okay. Yeah.
I have to tell. I have a cute story. My husband and I opened up a business in White Plains, New York, in 1981. I didn't even know where White Plains, New York was. So I pull into town, and I say, where would people who open a business go? And I see a sign that says, Sir Speedy Printing. I said, okay, everybody uses a printer. And I go to the printer, and I talk to the man, and I say, do you know a real estate company? And he says, oh, yeah, the guy down the street. So I walk down the street. I meet the real estate guy. He says, oh, I've got an office. I said, okay, I'll take the office. I come back to Sir Speedy, and I say to the man, thank you very much for telling me about that. Do you happen to know anybody who helps with marketing and advertising? And he said, yes, his name is Carrie Smith. And there he goes. He was walking. I opened the door and I go, yo, Carrie. It took John and I till last year to realize the initials KS.
Kurt Paulson.
All right. My mother, and I know most of y'all know that we're with Charlie Fulcher. My mother was a huge cook. She was a Southerner from Charleston, South Carolina, where nobody ate any kind of vegetable, I mean, that didn't have bacon grease in it. So she comes to Charlotte, of course, and she decides she wants to be an initiate, and she learns how to cook. I mean, a great cook. She had a vegetarian, made a vegetarian cookbook called Vegetarian Masterpieces, which I have like 5 copies of and still use it all the time. So she would make these wonderful cookies and cakes. Of course, nobody knew how to do that without eggs. They didn't really have egg replacer, but she did it. And when she took us up to, and she carried them everywhere, I mean, these cans of cookies. So we get up to Philadelphia to see Master. And we have us and the dog and Mama's stuff and cookies and everything in this itty-bitty little room. And one night, there's a knock on the door, and it's Har Charan Singh. And he says, Master wants cookies. I didn't hear this tale until much, much later. I mean, you really don't pay attention when you do that. Master wants cookies. And Mama goes, okay. And she goes and she gets like 3 or 4 kinds, and she gives them to Har Charan Singh, who says, thank you very much. And off he goes. But I didn't hear about it for the longest time. So it was opposite, reverse Prashad, which I thought was very funny. But she loved it. She's so funny.
I apologize. I talk too much. One more story about Charlie Fulcher's house. During the tour, Master was beyond anything you can describe. The glory, the magnitude, it was just unbelievable. His form would change. I saw his blue eyes, and they were huge. And it was like, oh. And there was one time Master gave a talk about love, and he emanated from his body this golden light into the auditorium, into us. I couldn't see his physical form. Now, all this time, I'm seeing all this magnificence, just stunning. You can't even describe. I was sitting in Charlie Fulcher's front yard, and Master was sitting right in front of me. I was really close, maybe 5 feet. And I was looking up, and I was thinking, where is the Master? Now, Master was sitting there. All I saw was an old man. And I'm like, you know, of course, my mind, I'm like blown away. It's like, where is the Master? I don't, you know, I mean, I'm confused. But Master was teaching me the lesson that Master was not the body. I got it.
The Olympic short plan.
You know, right. George talks about Master coming, and everywhere he sees these signs, Zup, Zup. Do you all know this story, Zup? And so I said, Zup, Zup. He finally turns, he's in the U.S. now from England, and he finally turns and he says, what is Zup? And it's seven up signs. And, of course, the seven is a Z, is a Z, okay? It's not the end of it, but he's a, so I cannot look at a seven up bottle or anything without thinking of Master wanting Zup. He wanted, they got him some Zup. He got to taste it. He liked it.
This was told to me by some initiates that were driving Master around in Miami. And Master looked up at the sign and said, what is steak? What is this steak? You know, steak. So one of the initiates in the back of the car said, oh, Master, you know, it's you take a cow and then you cut them up in little pieces, you know, and you get the best parts, you know, you put them on the store. Oh, man, steak. Oh, yes, a steak. Okay. So, yeah, but it just goes to show you, you don't need all that, complications in there, you know. You, the simplified things is easier, you know, it's to do it that way. Yeah. But all right, so one day I'm in front of Master. This is the last day. Master's leaving. I'm leaving Master. And Master, just after he gave the prasad, my cousin had a terrible thing happen to her. And she and her husband, she was thinking about divorcing her husband. So she had asked me, look, if you get over to India, would you ask Master, what does he think about the situation with me and my husband, that I'm thinking about leaving him? So I waited until the last person left, and then I'd have a little extra time to talk to Master. So I got up front of him, and I said, Master, well, he wasn't willing to talk, but I said, Master, my cousin is thinking about leaving her husband, you know, because her husband didn't take the meat, he wouldn't take the initiation because of the meat stipulation in it. So Master's hands went all the way up in the air, just like these old prophets of old, and he said, oh, that is the worst thing they could do. The worst thing they could do is to get divorced. And then he said, all right, you know what you do? You send them the pamphlets and the literature, and things will be okay. And sure enough, they were together this day until they both died. Yeah. So it's just a beautiful thing.